This is going to be a bit of a makeshift episode today with the NHL finally resuming after a little bit of a longer delay. We'll talk about some World Juniors, some women's U20 hockey, some players speaking out about not going to the Olympics, which teams are going to be affected most by returning to play after the delay and which teams are going to thrive. And we do a little bit of a wrap up with the Canadian teams around the National Hockey League. This is episode 113 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Good to be back in the saddle. Tuesday, December the 28th, Kyle Gamard here, and the voice is back. I know I did an episode last week, but it was still kind of on the fritz a little bit. It wasn't fully to where it was, whereas now it seems like I am back at 100% and excited to do the episode here. Follow along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. You can listen along at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Some things that we'll go over today, and it's not going to be too complicated of a show. I don't really have a whole lot of audio pieces in there. I don't have a whole lot of clips and sound effects or anything like that. But there's a few topics that I want to touch on that I kind of want to broaden and put a bit of a different spin on them and, you know, see if you can kind of get it from that perspective. But we will start off. I want to kick things off with the National Hockey League. And, you know, after a little bit of a hiatus, there was some few games that were postponed. It looks like today the National Hockey League will return to play. The league has basically been postponed since December the 21st. And even then, every single game was postponed outside of the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the Vegas Golden Knights. Tampa Bay winning that one 4-3. Wednesday, the 22nd postponed, the 23rd postponed, the 27th postponed. And today, all games outside of the Columbus Blue Jackets and Chicago Blackhawks will play. That's Tampa Bay versus Montreal. That's going to be Vegas versus LA. And Arizona versus the San Jose Sharks. There are games and teams that are still postponed, like the Toronto Maple Leafs, who had a multitude of players on the COVID list. Now, guys are slowly starting to come back, but even tomorrow's game against Pittsburgh is postponed, along with the Winnipeg Jets, the Boston Bruins and Ottawa Senators, and the Dallas Stars and Colorado Avalanche. But as of Thursday, December the 30th, no games or teams are postponed then. There's one other game, Colorado and Dallas, but every day things update, things change. It's going to be very interesting to see. Some teams that, because a lot of teams were either hot or cold or either needed a break to get healthy or really didn't want the break to happen because they were kind of running on all cylinders. Some teams that I think are going to thrive coming back. The first team, in my opinion, is Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay tonight, they're going to get Braden Point back, which that is just going to be monumental for them. This is a guy that they just paid over $9 million to, long-term commitment. They still don't have Kucherov, but they were operating without Point, Kucherov, and still being in the top of not only their division, but right now the National Hockey League at 26-4. I mean, they're a wagon who just got one of their most important players back. And I think them getting a little bit healthy actually benefits them significantly. Teams that I don't think this pause is going to benefit, Vancouver. You know, Vancouver's riding a 6-game winning streak. They had a brand new head coach, new management, and this new attitude going into games. And now all of a sudden they've had to take this little bit of a hiatus, almost a week's worth. And now they're just supposed to jump back in and try to win a 7th in a row. I like the changes. I like the team dynamic. Maybe I'm wrong about it, but I just think that momentum was something that they have been clinging to all season long. And then they finally get it. They finally kind of move back into a point where they can start surpassing teams. Like, they're 6 points behind Edmonton, who are one of the better teams in the Pacific. They're same behind Calgary, and they're holding down the third spot in the division. And now they kind of had to pause, put things on hiatus, and now jump back into it and get right back into that race. I don't know how I'll expect them to do after this. A team that's going to thrive, again, just injury-wise, and they, I don't even really think they've postponed any games, but that's Vegas, the Vegas Golden Knights, who made the big trade, Jack Eichel. It just meant that more time could be taken for Jack Eichel to get better, to get healthy. Now players aren't even going to the Olympics, so he can just focus on returning to the team and playing his first game for them. The one thing at the beginning of the season for Vegas, they basically just had to survive. They were missing Mark Stone, Max Pacioretty, I'm pretty sure Shea Theodore at some points, and a few other players. And they were just basically holding on for dear life. And now they're starting to get healthy. Now all their guys are coming. And soon Jack Eichel's going to be a part of this team. Chandler Stephenson's been great. You've still got the Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault. I think William Karlsson was also hurt for a time being. Now you get your Captain Stone back. Pacioretty's been on fire. Robin Lehner's back there. Pietrangelo. This team only is going to benefit with an with additional time off. And I think that, you know, right now they are sitting atop the division tied with 40 points with Anaheim. That is going to be, and they're going to continue thriving. Another team I think is going to thrive, Colorado. Colorado, same idea. Guys are getting healthy. McKinnon back, Rantanen, Landeskog, Makar. Your goaltending was a little banged up too. You were starting guys left, right, and center. Hopefully you can get Darcy Kemper back in the cage and solidify that a little bit. I think they're going to be great. Teams that I don't think this is going to benefit, I try and pick one more here. I want to pick a team that's been doing really well. A team that I don't think is going to benefit is Detroit. And here's why. Detroit right now is sitting fourth in the Atlantic, well behind Florida, Toronto, and Tampa. They're 7 points behind Florida, 9 behind Toronto, and 11 behind Tampa. Detroit was kind of, they weren't killing it, but they were 6-4, and they're playing way above what teams were expecting them to do this year. And teams behind them in that division include the Boston Bruins. And Boston is a team that they have 5 games in hand. They are going to get healthier. There's apparently talks of Tuukka Rask possibly coming back in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Gives guys like Bergeron and Marchand and Pasternak some time to breathe. Taylor Hall. You got Brendan Carlo and McAvoy on the back end. Detroit has been going off of this youth and exuberance in Mort Sider and Lucas Raymond. You've got Bertuzzi and Larkin and Greiss and Nedeljkovic, and it's been a good run, but I just think that time off and kind of reality starts to set in a little bit. I think the next team I'm going to talk about might surpass them. And that team that I just mentioned before is the Boston Bruins. I never rule Boston out, and Boston is always a team that benefits from some time off. Having said that, they have played the least amount of games in the NHL by a long shot. The next closest, I think, is 27 for Colorado, and they've had games postponed. Boston's only played 26 games. Detroit's played 31. Florida's played 29. Toronto's played 30. Tampa's played 30. They got a lot of games to catch up on. And during the breaks in which players were going to have time off, Boston is going to be cramming games in, trying to make up for lost time. And I think that might hurt them a little bit. But getting healthy and mentally being prepared to go on this run, I think will benefit them a lot too. All right, speaking of Boston and the Olympics, obviously, news broke that the NHL and the IIHF and the NHLPA decided that players are not going to be sent or permitted to go and play in Beijing for the upcoming 2022 Olympics, which is very much a downer. It's disappointing because everybody had these mock teams and players who they were anticipating going, and they were having fun coming up with lineups, but that decision was made official. And listen, before I bring up this guy, let me just say my 2 cents about this. The NHL in this situation is basically trying to make sure that the NHL is okay. I don't think the NHL is thrilled that they're not getting a chance to send their players for the second consecutive time in the 8-year span. They're not thrilled that they don't get a chance to showcase their players to the world and help grow the game, because in longevity, it only benefits the league having their players on display in countries that hockey isn't necessarily booming in, Beijing, China. But the NHL is, you got to think of yourself sometimes. You know, if there's one thing that this past year or two has taught me, It's that it's okay to prioritize yourself with mental health and the stresses of work or school or a relationship or family. It's okay to prioritize yourself. And it sounds easy and dumb, and obviously you do that, but you got to think about how many times you do a favor for somebody, how many times you say yes to something that you don't necessarily want to, but you know that it'll make another party or individual feel better. So it can be difficult to prioritize yourself and say no and say, you know what, I'm just going to take a me day, or no, I'm going to focus on me, or no, I can't do this. That's kind of what the NHL is doing. The NHL, I think I just saw a news update earlier that said that as of today, in all 32 teams have had at least one positive COVID-19 case. And right now, taking care of yourself, your league, making sure you finish an 82-game season is kind of paramount to the league after having back-to-back COVID-shortened seasons. The timing is abysmal, but the league is already using the break that would have sent players to the Olympics. They're using that time to play the games that have been postponed and made up so that they get the 82 games in. Now, the league could allow players to make the decision upon themselves and go represent their countries if they feel like doing so. Those conversations would then be had between the players and their organizations. Some players would decide to opt out. Some players would decide, be like, you know what, screw it, I'm doing it. We're in a good enough position, or our team's not good enough anyway, so I'm going to go. And moving on to that, and players like Connor McDavid have spoken out, and McDavid basically just said, it's disappointing because obviously you want to represent your country, but he said that he thinks that an opportunity should come up for a best on best tournament, even if it's not the Olympics, maybe the World Championships or the World Cup of Hockey that took place in North America. That was a absolutely smash success that had the North American team and Canada and Slovakia, and just, it was great. It was fantastic. But Brad Marchand reached out and gave his two cents. And I'm going to read the quote that this was on his Twitter page that he posted. And this is the point that he's trying to make here. And again, that's why I made my case earlier, to try and understand where the NHL is coming from, where they got to focus on themselves. They got to focus on making money short term, even if, you know, long term, it doesn't get players out and exposed in Beijing. So Brad Marchand says the NHL and NHLPA can change the rules of the CBA to add a taxi squad so that they don't miss any games or don't lose any money, which has already been agreed upon that the players will pay back in escrow until the owners are made whole from what they have lost during this pandemic, regardless of how many games are missed. Yet they can't do a taxi squad during the Olympics so they can honor the agreement they made so that NHL players can go. Please tell me that's not BS. And for all of you who want to pipe back about forfeiting pay while being gone, yeah, not a problem. Let the players make their choice. So here's the other end of it. NHL organizations have reserve players, right? There's a player or two that normally sits in the press box. There are taxi squad players. There are AHL affiliates and players who can be called up if your team is sending one or two players away, if a player gets hurt, if they go on the COVID list. This would just give these players an opportunity to come up, get some exposure themselves. Because when you think about it, there are some teams who will be sending more players than others. Teams that would be affected, funny enough, a lot by it, would be the Boston Bruins. Think about the players on Boston who would be going to the Olympics. Off the top of my head right now, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak for the Czechs, Charlie McAvoy, I doubt Tuukka Rask, but he would be a possibility for Finland. Well, there's your perfection line and your best defenseman gone. And Boston would be hurting from it. But this is a Boston player coming out and saying these things. Another team that would be hurt from it, the Toronto Maple Leafs. amazingly enough, off the top of my head, players that could be selected: Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, if he comes back healthy, John Tavares, Morgan Riley, if he's selected. There is the off chance that Jack Campbell is the third reserve goaltender that goes with the United States. That's a lot of firepower. But there are taxi squads. There are affiliates. Would those teams suffer during that time span? Absolutely. But I do also agree with Marchand in saying that it should be left up to the player to decide whether they feel comfortable going or not. I don't know if John Tavares feels comfortable going, and he might not go and stay in Toronto. He has made that very clear. Players like Alexander Ovechkin and Evgeny Malkin would happily go. They have made it very clear that the last time that there was a disagreement, they were willing to breach contract. And I think the Washington Capitals actually gave Alexander Ovechkin the okay to go, and they would defend him and tell him that they would take care of the fine or whatever the case may have been. There are players that are willing to do that. And I agree with Marchand there, and at least giving the players the option to do so. But I see the NHL side. Sometimes you got to look after priority number one. Sometimes you got to be selfish and think about yourself and think about your product. And Lord knows what happens if you go over to Beijing and it spreads around and you are caught in China for 2 months. And instead of missing 5 or 6 games, you miss 20 games. And that affects your team. But I think that's a conversation that needs to be had with the player and the organization. And the NHL said, basically steps back, because I believe that some players wouldn't go. Like, I don't think John Tavares would go. I think Alex Ovechkin would go. I think Austin Matthews would go. I think Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid would go. The Oilers would be screwed, if you think about it. I know that there still would be a break, but games need to be made up during the postponement. And either you got to jam those games in at a different time, or you got to play them during that break. The Oilers would literally be missing their two best players. It'd be tough for them. Darnell Nurse might also be a player that might go. But I see both sides. I see the player's point of view in that, one, it was already agreed upon in writing that they are to be allowed to go. There are taxi squads. There are ways around it. Absolutely. But teams would be affected. An AHL call-up is not going to be the equivalent of Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron and David Pastrnak. They're just not. But at the same time, I get where the NHL is coming from. If there's anything I've learned over the past year and a half, 2 years, it's that it's okay to prioritize yourself and be a little selfish. It's good for your mental health. It's good for your well-being. And it could be good for the league, at least for this year, to get a full 82-game season in. All right, let's move on here. And I want to quickly talk about the World Junior Hockey Championships. Those are going on right now. Canada looks dominant as ever. Finland looks like a ton of fun. Sweden won again last night. They're dominant. But today, for the first time, the USA had to forfeit the game, because you can't really postpone these games during this World Junior Hockey Championship. And today, the United States of America forfeited the preliminary World Junior Hockey Championship game versus Switzerland due to 2 cases of COVID-19 on the team. And, I mean, we knew it was a very real possibility that it was going to happen. And forfeiting the game, I'm thinking the reasoning behind it is that there could be a close contact and it spreads to those 2 teams and then the whole tournament is shut down. So I think it's kind of like when you have a big cut, you know, you see in the movies where, you know, a zombie movie where somebody gets bitten in the forearm, and instead of trying to salvage it or save it or hold on, you chop off the entire arm to save the rest of the body. That's kind of what this is happening right here. Instead of trying to play the game and try to keep precautions and hold your breath and hopefully everything's fine, the league just said, US, you're forfeiting. We're chopping you off at the arm. Go get better. Go heal up. Go get negative tested and go play your next game and try to get him. That's what I think is happening here. But I think it was not inevitable, but I think there was a very real possibility, regardless of whatever team it was, that this was going to happen. And a lot of people wondered how the IIHF would approach it. This is how. This also goes back to my thought process on the Olympics in Beijing. Right? The league is trying to save its players and not send them over across North America to Beijing. What if a COVID outbreak happened during the Olympics? And your players not only aren't even playing the games representing their countries, but now are stuck there for 4 to 6 weeks. At least this case, you know, it can be contained here in North America. This is more for the CHL players, obviously players in Russia and Switzerland and Sweden and all that who are playing back overseas have to quarantine and figure all that out. But I think the rules are a lot less vigorous here in terms of quarantining. I think that we've caught up a little bit in North America, and after a couple negative tests in about 7 to 10 days, you can go back. But apparently, from what McDavid was saying, how it made him uneasy thinking about if there was a positive test or an outbreak, you'd be there for 6 weeks. That's the difference. But I think that this was bound to happen at some point or another. And we're seeing how the World Juniors is handling it. And they are, as the metaphor went, chopping off the entire arm of the infection. Zombie bites the character's arm in the movie. What's the first thing they do? Tie it off, chop the arm off, save the body. Don't let it spread. And the States, unfortunately, had to pay for it. They are a very good team. I think they can win their next game if they're eligible to play. But that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing happen so far. I quickly want to touch on this point here about, I've seen a lot of people talk about this. So the World Junior Hockey Championships is happening. The Olympics are happening, right? Even if the NHL isn't sending players over, hockey games will happen. And one thing that's not happening is the Women's U20 tournament, which goes on at the same time as the World Junior Hockey Championships. Now, maybe it doesn't get nearly as much coverage as it should, but it still gets some coverage. And, you know, a lot of people talk about how it always comes down to the same two teams, the United States and Canada, And that's fair. I mean, they play a rivalry series across North America where they just go to different series and play each other, and they're getting better and better and stronger and better. Now, unfortunately, other countries don't have the luxury of playing the United States or Canada as often unless they are these tournaments. When you cancel tournaments like those, you don't give the other countries the opportunity to play the best as often as they should be. Think about the World Juniors. What was it? 10 years ago? 15 years ago? Canada won like 8 or 9 gold medals in a row. What's happening now? Canada's not just a shoe-in to win the tournament anymore. Finland's won. Russia's won, the States won. The competition's getting better. It wasn't better 15 years ago. It was Canada winning gold and every other team fighting for second and third. But this tournament gets played every year, and programs get better. They start chipping away. And next year, the World Juniors is expanding to 11, 12 teams instead of 8. Which is fantastic. It's a broader group to work with, and you get other countries getting in the mix and playing against the best. Think about what you do for a living right now. You didn't just get good at what you did. You didn't just get good at math. You practiced it, and you worked on equations that were harder than maybe your brain could handle at the time. But eventually you got it. And then you kept increasing the difficulty. It's the same thing as practicing anything. When you go to hockey practice, right? You get called up to play with the kids a year or two older than you. Are you as good? Maybe not. But you get the chance to play with competition that's better than you. And that betters yourself. What you are depriving here is other countries like a Switzerland, like a Sweden, like a Germany, who are winning games at the World Juniors. You're not giving those countries and those women the opportunity to play Canada and the United States. Would they win those games? Probably not. But after getting exposed to them on more than just one occasion, programs start to grow, players start to grow, other countries start to get better, and it's not just the same two teams playing over and over and over again. For every time tournaments like these, competitions like these are canceled, and countries like Germany and Switzerland and Russia and Belarus and Austria don't get a chance to play Canada, US, even though Canada and US are probably going to win, look at the World Juniors. It's not just Canada and US. Are they still great? Absolutely. But there are other countries in the mix. And if you don't allow that exposure to get the chance to play them, the game is never going to grow. It's going to stay isolated on Canada and US, and we're not going to be able to talk about other countries. A lot of players, both at the World Junior level and the NHL level, have talked about how women's hockey has been a beacon for them and that they should be getting a lot more credit and exposure than they should. Players that play professionally watch women's hockey. I watch women's hockey. It's great hockey. You know my most liked post on the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast Twitter, Instagram page is the Canada-US Women's Rivalry Series with Marie-Philippe Poulin scoring in overtime, going bar down to win against the United States. It's my most liked thing. Of all the McDavid going end-to-ends, of Nick Bjugstad scoring that tiny little slot goal, of the Trevor Zegras flip pass Michigan behind the net. No, it's Marie-Philippe Poulin in the US-Canada, I believe it's the World Championships, women's hockey. It's my most liked post. You've got to find more ways to get these other countries playing against Canada and the US to catch them up so that it can expand and grow like the World Juniors is finally growing. The only way it expands and grows is if you expose them. And yes, they take a couple beatings of 10-1 and 9-0 or 14-2 or whatever. But you expose them to better competition and they raise the bar for themselves as to what they need to do to get on their level. Then the games get closer. Then they're 5-2, 6-2. And then all of a sudden, you got 2-3 other countries battling with Canada and the US now. If it's Sweden and Russia and Slovakia, it takes time. But eventually, teams and countries and other programs do catch up. You just got to give them the opportunity to do so. All right, let's finish off here talking about some of the Canadian teams and wrap it up here. Starting off with the Montreal Canadiens, the Habs, they are back in action tonight going up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay, I believe they're playing Maxime Lagacé in net, which should give Montreal an opportunity. There's still no timetable for Carey Price to return to that team. They are, honestly, for the Habs, embrace what you are this year. You know, last year was a magical year. I think there might've been some expectations from some fans, but to repeat and be a Stanley Cup contender, I mean, the Habs were 18th last year out of 32 teams, which technically you got to be top 16 just to make it. Now you're near the bottom of the standings, but you got a bunch of prospects playing in the World Juniors. You have an opportunity of getting another high pick. I would bring up your kids and let them play. I'd bring up Caulfield, play Suzuki a whole bunch, put him in all kinds of situations. He sucks on face-offs, put him in more face-offs. You only get better. You know who used to suck at face-offs? Austin Matthews. Wasn't great at face-offs. And credit, you got to give credit to where credit's due, but Mike Babcock, you know, protected him at times, but he played him on a strong side. And then she just started putting him in defensive situations, even if he failed. Even if he failed. You're up a goal, 30 seconds on the clock, goalie's pulled, Austin Matthews is taking the faceoff. Why? Because you learn from those moments, right? Bring up Caulfield, put him on the ice when you're down a goal with a minute left. See if he can score. He scored overtime playoff goals for you last year. Call him up, stop calling him up, setting him down, calling him up, setting him down. Leave him up. There's no point now. He's got NHL experience. Leave him up. Get him comfortable, try new things with him, be open, communicate. Winning is not the most important thing right now in Montreal. It is building the young core that you have garnered. It is the Nick Suzuki and the Cole Caulfield and the, at some point, Goulet when he comes up and finding a way to get Carey Price back and Alexander Romanoff and, you know, trying to find a way to get Christian Dvorak integrated and BA Montreal. It still doesn't feel like he's a Hab. It really doesn't. And from Habs fans, apparently they aren't in love with him and they would much rather Jesper Kotkaniemi, but I still don't think you could have done anything about that. And you weren't paying him $6 million to do that either. All right, Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, they are 500 without Paul Maurice after resigning from the team. He kind of left that message out there just saying that his tenure, his run came to an end. He didn't think he was, you know, grasping the room anymore. And, you know, unfortunately, that was his decision to resign. The players loved him. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, Scheifele talked about it. Connor Wheeler, you know, the Jets really need to figure out. The Jets need to figure out what they are, and they've dealt with a couple injuries. They have kind of been on and off this season, but they need to figure out. I think Blake Wheeler's off for a little bit now. He's going to be hurt for some time, but they need to find out their identity. I think there's a lot of players and names and potential as to what this team has shown in the past. You've got Connor Hellebuyck, your so-called best goalie in the world, who I don't think he's top five, but I think he's top 10, but I think he's overhyped. We talked about this on the last episode, if you want to go back and listen to it, but he's a good goalie. You've got a goalie who can steal a game, who can steal a series. You just got to get there first. You've got your talent. You've got your Scheifeles and your Kyle Connors and your Nikolaj Ehlers and your Pierre-Luc Dubois and your Stasny's, and you got a couple extra defensemen. You got your Nate. I think you need a bigger, stronger defenseman, the top four guy who you can just really pound the minutes in with, like a Jake Muzzin type or like a David Savard, who Montreal has, who would be a great addition. But I think the Jets got to figure out who they are, what their identity is after Paul Maurice. I think the players that are there right now need to have that conversation and discuss what they are. And if Scheifele is going to, I think, you know, Wheeler stuck on one goal this season, but yeah, the Jets, they got to figure it out right now. The Ottawa Senators, they are kind of similarly to the Habs, you know, play your young guys. You know who I haven't heard a whole lot of this year? Tim Stützle. Haven't heard a whole lot of him. He was this big phenom, third overall pick who, quote, fell to them and Ottawa was super pumped about. And then they never really, like, there was a little bit of talk about him last year and this year, to be wholeheartedly honest with you. I haven't heard a lot of him. 28 games played. He's got 5 goals and 10 assists. Drake Batherson and Josh Norris have been exactly what you could have wanted. Batherson is becoming the player who's going to be a number one guy for this team. Alex Formanton, who's a nice little addition with 10 points in 25 games. Connor Brown, 17 and 24, only got 4 goals. He is a goal scorer. That will come around. And Thomas Chabot just continues to eat minutes. He's got 17 points in 28 games. But similarly to Montreal, try to get some picks, try to move some players. Maybe a team will take on a guy like Nikita Zaitsev or like a Chris Tierney, maybe even too. A Tyler Ennis is another guy. Connor Brown looks like they really like there and he might stay, but he's 27 years of age. I don't know if he's in the final year or last 2 years of his contract, but Connor Brown would fetch you a pretty penny too. And he is a very, very likable player. But towards the end of the year, bring up your young guys, see what you've got. Put Tim Stützle in some situations, see what he's got as a player too, and go from there maybe. But yeah, it's they're kind of figuring out. Also, get your goaltending situation worked out. Matt Murray, they got to sort that situation out in the offseason, because you signed him to a six-year deal at $6.5 million, and then you waived him. And I said that I didn't like the signing. I didn't like the goaltender. I thought he was a product of Pittsburgh and that he had two miracle runs for two. Now, he won two Stanley Cups. I can't take that away from him. He was great. But then he fell off and I just watched him play and I didn't like what I saw in him. I didn't think he's a great goaltender. And, you know, he's a guy that needs to have a good culture already established. I don't think he can be part of the culture and build it from bad to being good. I think he has to come into a situation and the culture's already great for him to have any success whatsoever. The Edmonton Oilers, who have kind of tapered off over the last little bit. They got off to this like crazy hot start and have been kind of hit and miss over the last little bit. The one thing I will say about Edmonton that I think they should get some credit for is Mike Smith has been hurt this whole time. They got to figure out their goaltending. And say what you want about, say what I want about Matt Murray. He's an upgrade from Mikko Koskinen, and he's in a better culture in Edmonton than he would be over in Ottawa. There are some talks about Marc-Andre Fleury going to Edmonton, which makes a lot of sense, but I think the Oilers want a guy who they can kind of play with for more than, like, this isn't the only year that the Oilers can win a championship. And I think having a Matt Murray in a better situation, he's a younger guy, you can score your way out of problems sometimes if he's not on his game, but then he can play well if he's in a good culture. Again, I don't love Matt Murray, but I like Matt Murray more in Edmonton than I do in Ottawa. Like, I like Matt Murray more in Pittsburgh than I do in Ottawa. Like, I knew it was a downgrade and I knew he wasn't going to play well. Any goaltender that goes to that situation, any goaltender that goes from the situation that they're in right now, like, let's just say Frederik Andersen, goalie in Toronto for a couple of years, is now in Carolina. He's fantastic. Let's just say he ended up going to Ottawa. Would he be in the top five for goals against, save percentage, wins, all that? No. Because you can only do so much as a goaltender. And at some point, you can't keep everything out and you eventually become a product of what the culture is around you. And you can help establish it and build it over time. But no one was going to Ottawa and just magically improving those numbers. So I think if I like Matt Murray more in Edmonton than I do in Ottawa. He's a younger guy. He's under 30. He's under contract. The cap hit is not great, but it's not awful. And you need a goalie. And you can't keep re-signing Mike Smith to these one-year deals and hoping a 41-year-old goaltender, 39-year-old goaltender plays out of his mind for you enough to get you further in the playoffs. I think you need to get a guy, and I think they really whiffed. I think they should have got Jacob Markstrom. I don't know why they didn't go out and get him a couple years ago, and he went to Calgary, and now Calgary's got their guy, and Calgary's clicking right now, but that's what I think. Edmonton at some point needs a goaltender. A lot of talks about Marc-Andre Fleury. I think you pay a lot less, and I don't know why they didn't claim Matt Murray, to be honest with you. When he got waived, I have no idea why they didn't claim Matt Murray. It didn't make any sense to me. Make the cap room work. Or be like, listen, we'll send you Koskinen. He's in the final year of his deal. We'll take on Murray. I think Koskinen makes like three something or four. So you're only really adding on an additional $2 million. That makes so much sense to me that I'm saying it out loud. I don't know why there isn't a deal like Koskinen and a third for Matt Murray or Koskinen and a fourth for Murray. That makes all the sense in the world. I have no idea why Edmonton hasn't done something like that yet, because it kind of blows me away. But Calgary, let's move on to them. And they're kind of sitting in a good spot. They're, I think, third in their division right now. They're tied with Edmonton. Their goaltending's been spectacular. You're getting offense from guys like Andrew Mangiapane and Gaudreau and Lindholm and Tkachuk, and your defense has been pretty good too. Don't be surprised if they make a trade with Seattle to go get Mark Giordano back. That's been in talks since he got selected from Calgary. And I think they could use another defenseman to really settle that core in and have that depth if they want to go on a run. But your goaltending's there. It looks like you're scoring goals. And Andrew Mangiapane has been just an absolute revelation. He's a fifth or sixth round pick a couple years ago from this. I think 2015 was the year. He was a sixth round pick, fifth round pick from the Flames. And just, he's leading the team, I think, in goals. He's up there in points. He's been fantastic. It gives him another element with Lindholm and Tkachuk and Monahan and Gaudreau. And the Flames are in a good spot right now. Vancouver, let's move on to them, second last team. Vancouver, before the postponements, were riding a 6-game winning streak with Bruce Boudreau. He's still getting acquainted and trying to figure things out, but I think this break is going to be, it's going to be a testament to how Boudreau acts next as the coach. You know, it's, he kind of walked into the situation with his old little happy-go-lucky attitude and went, "All right, guys, go play your game." And I don't think that's actually what happened, but you know, when you walk into a job halfway through the week, you walk in halfway through and you're like trying to learn of all the files and all the things they do on the go, and things just kind of start going your way. That's kind of what's happened. I think Bruce Boudreau has implemented his coaching tactics and styles, and but he's also, you know, other players have been quoted by saying he's just listening to what we want and going out and saying, okay, go do that. Like Bo Horvat basically said, like, the management and Bruce Boudreau, they listen to them or like what their thoughts are, concerns, and then they allow them to make the changes, which is the best thing you can do. And I'm not taking that away. That's sometimes the best thing, is let your ego put that aside and let the players tell you what they think will work. Go with that. I think that's what Bruce Boudreau did. But now they've had a break. He's had a chance to breathe and look at this team up and down, and he's really going to be able to start putting his systematic thoughts and schemes into this team, and I want to see how this team reacts to that moving forward. Connor Garland's been great. The Ekman-Larsson contract isn't spectacular, but he's playing top 4 minutes. He is eating a role in that defense, and he's giving them at least a solid NHLer versus he was a disaster in Arizona. He's been a better player this year than he was last year, and you are hopefully going to start seeing guys like Elias Pettersson. Brock Besser is now tied for the team leading goals. He's got like 4 goals in the 6 games since Boudreau has coached. So Besser feels more comfortable. You've got JT Miller still leading the team. Nils Höglander looks really good too. You've got that vastly pulled Colson rookie who maybe he looks a little bit better. Bruce Boudreau is an offensive minded coach. Him implementing his tactics to some gifted offensive players might help them continue. I'm excited to see where this team goes after the break here. And then lastly, we'll touch on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, I thought about talking about Toronto in the first segment of the show, discussing teams that I think will benefit from the break. This team got hit with COVID. Almost every player on the team, guys are just starting to come out of the COVID, out of their COVID isolation. TJ Brody and Jack Campbell. There are still a couple players in protocol right now, including a guy like Morgan Riley. I think Travis Dermott's off of it. But the one thing, the one player that this really benefited and helped for Toronto, Mitch Marner. Do you remember Mitch Marner collided with Jake Muzzin a while back in practice? He was put on LTIR, was expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks. A couple weeks have gone by and Toronto hasn't played any games. So Marner hasn't missed those games. Getting him back into that roster with Tavares and Nylander looking so good and Kerfoot and Matthews and Bunting, and now you're going to throw Marner up there and Spets is looking good and Ilya Mikheyev's come back, and I don't want to say that it's going to benefit because they were playing so well going into the break, and I just think that I think they might lose a little bit of mojo and momentum, but they're also going to be getting a top 10 winger in the NHL back into their lineup on a wing with one of the best top 5-10 centers in the NHL, and Austin Matthews, one of the best goal scorers in the game, and I just think that they will, I mean, obviously a lot of players going into protocol and have had COVID, unfortunately, but this break might have allowed them to get healthy, to get players back from protocol, and have injured players come back too, like an Ilya Mikheyev and a Mitch Marner, two guys who are going to be very important for this team down the stretch. They are in an incredibly tough division with Tampa and Florida and Boston and Detroit apparently playing pretty well too. Having Marner back without him really missing a whole lot of games and having him for when the games kind of crunch together and you're playing three games in four nights or three games in five nights is going to be very beneficial for this team. Obviously, having your goaltender Jack Campbell back is huge too. And I'm interested to see how they are going to be, because they're probably going to be missing a couple players when they eventually play, but their game tomorrow against Pittsburgh is postponed. The next time I believe they play is Saturday against Ottawa. They have also had some players in COVID, so it's going to be very interesting to see how they come out of the break, if they just keep running as soon as they're dropped off and playing games again, or if they're going to take a few games to get reacquainted with each other and new line combinations and stuff. But they're in a good spot. They won a bunch of games early. They have a bit of a jump on fourth place right now, so they can take a game or two, figure it out. But I'm interested to see how they're going to perform afterwards. All right, that about does it for the show today. Thank you for tuning in, and appreciate you following along during these crazy times with the variant, and I'm hearing a lot more people having to stay home and not see family, or if they go see family, then they got to stay home for 10 days and just it's been crazy to say the least. But I appreciate you listening in and following along, and it'd be nice to have NHL hockey back. The World Juniors are happening. Canada's playing again today. It's going to be fantastic. Follow along, listen on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm on anchor.com. I think we're streaming on 8 different ways you can stream us. So if you don't have one or the other, there's 6 more ways you can do it. Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. And the next time we're here, it'll be 2022. We'll talk about some resolutions maybe for some teams, and, you know, hopefully get 2022 off to a good start and a better start from maybe what 2020 or 2021 was. Until then, enjoy. I will see you in the new year. Until then, that's a wrap.